The Roots of Restlessness. Commentary for the July 17, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 9. A few years ago, I attended the 50th annual class reunion of my high school. High school was not the time of happy memories for me that it was for many others. A difficult home life meant that surviving academically was not high on my list of priorities. Nonetheless, with little encouragement to study, I did manage to eke out a C+ average. It was good enough to graduate with well over 200 of my fellow students. I had not attended a reunion prior, since available time to attend and distance were limiting factors. However, since a third of my graduating class had already passed away, I figured it was now or never. Several of those whom I would have considered back then to be destined for long and happy lives had neither. Such is the sadness and unpredictability of life. It seems that recently even more names of those I knew well back then are popping up in my Facebook feed as deceased or struggling with overwhelming health challenges. With so many of my classmates gone, I was surprised to see the huge gathering at the reunion. Even with a third missing, the rest, with their spouses, was a huge crowd, so much so that they ran out of food at the hotel-catered meal. But despite the crowd, I noticed that as people seated themselves at tables, little had changed since high school. The same social groups formed as though the same social strata still mattered. Even at my table, I found myself sitting with the same people I would have spent time together with 50 years before, even though I had not seen or spoken with any of them in all that time. When my generation graduated, many of us went into the military and then off to the Vietnam War. Having seen the wider world, I did not return to my hometown and so had little idea of where my old classmates were or what they were doing, but I got a few answers at the reunion. Kitsap County has long been a Navy county, home to the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard, and many naturally went to work there, doing their part in maintaining the Pacific Fleet. My father had worked there for several decades as well. Others went on to college and became attorneys, teachers, coaches, police officers, and all the other individuals that keep life in a small town, America, humming. John Mellencamp's ballad, Small Town, could easily have been the anthem of our town. Some feel that the growing urbanization of the American population means that most will never know the experience of growing up in a small town. But small towns still exist, and where they do not, many parents try to recreate that experience in the suburbs around our cities. Why do I share all of this? The reunion opened my eyes to how resistant we all are to change. Those same groups that meant so much in high school continue to speak to our needs today. An enduring form of tribalism continues to reinforce who matters and who does not, what clothing labels are important and which are not, even to the extent of what tables should be sat at and which not. But lest I be understood to be picking on my classmates, I have noticed the exact same thing in churches. Social tribalism exists there as well. On a larger scale, it is responsible for the proliferation of denominations, each feeling they have the unique, relevant truth society needs. One might even be able to predict, based on high school social status, which denominations or agnostic groups each student might gravitate to as an adult. I was voted most individual in high school, and maybe that was a natural path to becoming Seventh-day Adventist. It takes someone with a strong tendency toward individualism to choose to worship on Saturday when the Catholic, Orthodox, and almost the entire Protestant world are worshiping on Sunday. That willingness to break with the path everyone else seems to be following has set the tone for my entire life. Our Sabbath school lesson quarterly seems to identify this restless willingness to question as something that arises from greed and selfishness. This betrays a fundamental misunderstanding of what makes us human. If we were not seeking something better, why would we ever want to come to Jesus for salvation in the first place? This may be symptomatic of a bigger concern within Adventism, as well as other religions that try to limit questioning of their dogma, especially here in North America, with the accumulation of several generations of church members who have been raised with figurative denominational walls isolating them from social interaction with those from other tribes. Children see salvation, then, as perfunctorily assumed as a rite of passage without question. The mandatory dip into the baptismal pool at an early age, at times even earlier than the Jewish bat or bar mitzvah, seals them as among the saints and full-fledged members of the tribe, heart-rending conviction not expected or needed. One might think that this absorption into the greater tribe of denominationalism would override other non-Christian values, but in fact, it does not. This can readily be seen in those denominations that run robust parochial school systems. Having served as a parochial school board chairman, as well as seeing my own child's movement through one such parochial school system, I can say that the same smaller tribes within the larger tribe of the denomination function within Adventism as function in secular public schools. Just like in public schools, the children of doctors, dentists, and other professionals tend to act out on the school grounds the same superior social status they see modeled at home, child baptism aside. Children learn at an early age that one does not really socialize with the children of blue-collar workers, and especially not the impoverished or disabled. Even though these lower status individuals might be attending a parochial school they could never afford, thanks to the largesse of a kindly church member, they will never be invited for sleep-ins at the homes of children of the denomination's wealthier individuals. Nor will those socially blessed children ever do sleepovers at the homes of their poor parishioners. At one church I belonged to years ago, we hired a youth pastor. He did not understand that the church wanted him to simply serve as a glorified chaperone for the church's own youth. Instead, he had a missionary spirit and felt a calling to reach out to the children in the inner city neighborhood surrounding the church. Most of the church members commuted to the inner city church each week from the suburbs and wanted little to do with the dangerous neighborhood they found there. Admittedly, it was an area where even the city probably felt that God had little control. But the youth pastor was overwhelmingly successful, and many of the local children began coming to eat and fellowship at the church each week. The church was becoming what it should be, a safe harbor for those fleeing troubled homes. It had been that for me when I was young, so I understood and loved what this young man was doing in outreach. He faced opposition from the church every step of the way. The depth of that opposition was finally revealed when he planned a camping trip for the young people. The neighborhood children eagerly signed up, but not one child of a church member signed on for the camping trip. Their parents responded, "We don't want our children associating with those kinds of people." The report that came back from the camping trip later was that those children from the rough neighborhood were so appreciative of the blessing they had been given that they were the most well-behaved the youth pastor had ever taken camping. After dealing with so much opposition from the local church elite, the young man moved on, eventually marrying and having children of his own. I hope those children learn to appreciate the father they were blessed with. Being restless is not a sin. If we do not experience the uneasiness of dissonance between what we believe and what the world reveals to us, we have little motivation to move from the spot we have become so comfortable occupying. Perhaps this is why some come to church and are even baptized during or after a major life crisis. Something has come along to make them feel restless about the security they have always assumed was protecting them. Unfortunately, many of those who thus come into the church often leave when life stabilizes again. Perhaps this is a Mary Magdalene syndrome, where Jesus cast demons out repeatedly before Mary finally settled into fellowship with Jesus' disciples. Such restless souls need the safe harbor that Jesus supplies and expects the church to supply as well. Without that, we only have Ichabod's departed glory. We may be fortunate to belong to the higher social strata within our church. We may wear designer labels and drive expensive cars that depreciate many thousands of dollars the moment we drive the status symbol home. But these betray the true state of the ragged nature of our assumed righteousness. We should be aware that sackcloth and walking could be God's cure for that kind of righteousness, if we are willing to be healed. But if we are happy with those material baubles as our reward, we may never see our need of healing. That would be a tragedy. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You may find other podcasts like it, as well as the written copy of this commentary and hundreds of other commentaries at our website at stillwatersministry.com. May God richly bless you and your family.